Hello, this is your Polycast for Monday, June 20th, the longest day of the year. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, nearly 5,000 Alina nurses go on strike. Nurses at Alina Health in the Twin Cities are on the picket lines for a second day. The nurses went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations failed. The main sticking point is the nurses' health plan. Hospital officials say a transition to replacement workers went smoothly, but union members say the changeover was anything but business as usual. Matt Sepik has the story.
4,800 nurses walked off the job early yesterday morning and began picketing outside Abbott, Northwestern, United, Mercy, and Unity Hospitals and the Phillips Eye Institute. Alina management was ready with 1,400 replacement workers already hired. But for the regular staff, the transition from hospital floor to picket line was not smooth. Abbott Northwestern Intensive Care Unit nurse Vanita Gladney worked Saturday night right up until the strike began. Instead of handing off important patient information to a peer RN, she had to talk to a supervisor who was busy handling the transition. Gladney says it was chaotic.
I got as much out as I could, but we had concerns leaving that we didn't know who was coming in to take over these patients and if they knew how to take care of them properly. When we left, we weren't even sure that there was staff there to watch them. But, we walked out the door as security was there, and we did the best that we could. And, we all just kind of walk out and pray for the best.
At a news conference yesterday afternoon, Abbott Northwestern President Dr. Ben Bock-Wigg said the switchover to replacement nurses was not glitch-free, but he has confidence in his temporary hires.
But we've found the nurses overall to be highly skilled, to have the skill sets that we need them to have. They need to be brought up to speed, and our leaders have been there to support them through that. And we believe that we've been able to make that transition very smoothly.
Alina President and CEO Dr. Penny Wheeler says things are operating normally across the health system. Unity Hospital in Fridley scaled back some elective surgeries, but Wheeler says patients are still being treated, doctors are delivering babies, and all of the emergency rooms remain open.
Given the rest of our care team members are all still present and active, and people are actually going above and beyond to support them, we still feel very, very confident that excellent care is being received.
Contract negotiations between Alina and the Minnesota Nurses Association broke down over health insurance. Wheeler says the plan nurses have now is costly and unsustainable, and they need to switch to the same corporate health plan thousands of other Alina employees have. That would mean slightly lower monthly premiums, but MNA Executive Director Rose Roach says members would have to pay significantly more in out-of-pocket costs.
This is cost shifting. None of this brings healthcare costs down overall. All it does is shift the costs onto the backs of the nurses.
Nurses say Alina has not given them enough information to assess their proposal properly, but Wheeler says the company has given the union 30,000 documents about the health plan, detailing changes going back years. Alina nurse Angela Bacchetti, who's on the union bargaining committee, says her colleagues are also concerned about low staffing levels and getting training to deal with violent patients or visitors. But given that the strike is scheduled to end at a specific time, she's uncertain what will happen if there's no deal.
If 7 days isn't enough, I don't know what's next then. Alina should take this seriously. And that's what the nurses out here walking day in and day out will show them.
University of Minnesota Labor Studies Professor John Budd says fixed duration strikes have become more common in recent years, especially in the janitorial and fast food industries. But he says it's rare for them to last a full week.
And I think what makes this unique is that it looks like MNA is continuing to sort of experiment and trying to come up with some hybrid in terms of, well, it's not quite open-ended. However, we think we need to put more pressure on the hospital than we would be able to get with a single day. So let's try something different. Let's try 7 days.
Unless the two sides reach a deal sooner, union members say they'll take to the picket lines from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through Saturday evening. And they plan to be back on the job next Sunday morning. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
District energy experts are in St. Paul this week to discuss how to use more renewable energy sources to heat and cool buildings. Organizers expect more than 800 people from 20 different countries will attend the International District Energy Association's conference. They represent systems that typically provide heating and cooling for buildings in places like business districts or campuses. District Energy St. Paul and Evergreen Energy CEO Ken Smith says district energy has many advantages as cities move away from burning fossil fuels.
You can recover waste heat, for example, from sewage, from industry, from power generation, and move that energy thermally around a community to meet the heating needs of the buildings in that community.
St. Paul's system is already doing that with biomass, and officials are also working on renewable energy storage and sewage heat recovery projects. Smith says district energy systems can make cities resilient when dealing with power outages. Vacant storefronts still dot University Avenue, but light rail boosters say the Green Line project has fueled job growth and new housing along the University Avenue corridor linking Minneapolis and St. Paul. More than a dozen nonprofits that work to shape the project issued a final report card the other day and celebrated what they said were some notable successes in the 2 years since the line opened. Tim Nelson reports.
The Green Line's success as a transit option is hard to argue. Metro Transit General Manager Brian Lamb told a coalition of nonprofits in Minneapolis that the billion-dollar train line is more than a decade ahead of ridership projections.
Since the Green Line opened, over 25 million people have taken a ride on the Green Line. We are at the level of ridership that we were projecting for the year 2030.
The route has had some success off the tracks as well. The Metropolitan Council said this year there's been $4.2 billion in real estate investment along the line, although not all of that is connected to the train. Peter Matheson is a research associate with the Wilder Foundation.
Jobs along the corridor are up 3% over 2009, particularly in downtown Minneapolis as well as the Midway East segment.
That's the stretch between Lexington Parkway and downtown St. Paul. Matheson says the effort to keep the neighborhoods along the line affordable are also mostly succeeding, although rents have been rising. But that doesn't seem to be keeping people away, Matheson said.
All of those new housing units has allowed residential density to go up along with population. The population of the corridor has grown 14% since 2010.
That's good news for 14 nonprofits that put $12 million into the project and neighborhoods along the rail line. They included the Ford Foundation, the Knight and McKnight Foundations, as well as the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bush, and Travelers Foundations, working together as the Central Corridor Funders Collaborative. They were also looking for less tangible successes, like boosting minority employment on the project and helping businesses cope with construction. They also wanted to keep the project from tearing down the neighborhood, like the construction of Interstate 94 did in the late 1960s. But their findings aren't all rosy. Research also found the number of small businesses along the line have fallen since construction started, and state figures also show employment has risen faster elsewhere in the Twin Cities. And the benefits of transit can be hard to pin down. McAllister economics professor Sarah West and researcher Needham Hurst recently found that Metro Transit's Blue Line had a development impact that was minimal compared with the rest of Minneapolis. West and another researcher, Clemens Pilgrim, have followed up with a second study looking at home prices near Blue Line stations. West says they were looking for other potential impacts of transit. The preliminary results?
During the first years after introduction, homes that were closer to stations cost about 4, 5, 6% more than homes that in South Minneapolis that were farther from stations. And that's controlling for all of those other things that can affect home prices.
A few years later, though, West says that effect went away. She says the Green Line has a different economic context and may have a better result. But she also notes that the construction followed the Great Recession and that the overall apartment market has improved and financing got easier at the same time the trains finally got rolling along University Avenue.
This kind of economic activity that's occurring, say, along University Avenue, could very well be due to the recovery in real estate markets and not attributable to the line.
West says it may take many more years before the real effect of transit investment comes into focus. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Monday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.